This is Monday, May 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the ransomware cyber attack that has crippled companies and governments around the world ebbed in intensity a bit today, though experts warn that new versions of the virus could emerge. The latest North Korean missile launch has drawn strong reaction from nations around the world, although some are calling for calm.
We need to try diplomacy, see if it works, and if it doesn't work, then we can move on to tougher measures.
Also ahead, you'll hear about a circus teaching teenagers how to walk across the social divide that separates poverty and privilege, all on today's International Edition. Some businesses and governments in Asia today reported additional disruptions as employees turned on their computers and checked email as a major cyber attack that began Friday affecting more than 150 countries and hundreds of thousands of computers, although the spread of the attack reportedly has ebbed somewhat. Stephen Wilson, the head of Europol's European Cybercrime Center, said the so-called ransomware attack was unprecedented.
We've seen much more complex things before, but what's new is the use of a worm to actually propagate through systems. This has led to a far greater uptake of the malware across systems, and as a consequence, has caused significantly more problems.
The attack, according to Microsoft President and Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith, used malicious software that may have been stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency, the NSA. In his blog, Smith said government should treat this attack as a wake-up call. He said we need governments to consider the damage to civilians that comes from hoarding these vulnerabilities. Joining me in the studio is Andrew Palshevsky, who covers social media for us at VOA, and joining us by phone is Andre Mendez. Andre is the Chief Information Officer and the Chief Technology Officer, overseeing all aspects of the Information Technology and Infrastructure Support Services for U.S. international media, and that includes us here at the Voice of America. Andre, what was the nature of this attack, and how did it get so big?
Well, I mean, this attack really got so big because there's an enormous amount of systems out there throughout the entire world that still have not been patched for this particular vulnerability. And with the injection software that apparently was gathered from the NSA, there was a perfect combination, a perfect storm of availability of targets and ability to reach them. And so the situation was created for, you know, massive proliferation because as a worm, it went from system to system to system, both across the world institutions.
When I logged onto my computer this morning here at VOA, I half expected to have problems, but everything ran and continues to run smoothly. How were you and your staff able to address the problem?
Well, we have a very aggressive patching campaign. We do it every month, and so we make sure that all of our systems are completely up to date. But in addition, I mean, people should understand that this particular worm and this particular ransomware actually targeted an edition of Windows that is no longer supported by Microsoft. It mostly is targeted at Windows XP, and the support for that waned away about two years ago.
Yeah, Microsoft won't do anything with it. Yeah.
Most of the systems were really legacy systems that had not been discontinued.
And that, of course, is open to a lot of other countries which might not be as up-to-date as the United States is. Andrew Palshevsky is here. What's social media having to say about this?
Well, it's cluing people into a lot of systems that they thought were up-to-date but aren't. And you're seeing a lot of photos going around on social media of different computers that are affected, things like airport and train station arrival and departure screens, electronic billboards, ATM machines. So people are seeing very quickly some of these systems weren't up to date and they've been susceptible to attack. But some of those pictures are being called fakes. There was one in particular I saw, it was of a train station departure board, and a lot of people saying it was perhaps a fake photo for different reasons. So you always have to take a grain of salt when you look at these things, when you hear this information, especially people taking advantage of this now on social media saying, oh, click here for the solution, click here for the patch, and that leads to another virus. So you always have to be careful. Microsoft tweeted out a patch on their official Twitter support account. That's the best place to go if you need to get that.
Andre, how likely is this kind of attack to continue and perhaps even get bigger? And what about copycats?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, there will be different variants of this because at the end of the day, this could be a very lucrative activity. One might argue that this attack could have been far worse were it not for a fact that it had a built-in kill switch that was fortunately discovered by a young and very entrepreneurial individual in Europe who came to the realization that by registering a domain name that was extremely complicated and mostly gibberish, that he could get all of these infected computers to actually contact that website and then put themselves to sleep again. So almost a combination of entrepreneurship and serendipity that led to this thing being diffused with far less consequences than would have otherwise. But without a shadow of a doubt, that kill switch will be removed, which will mean that the next variant will present a much larger challenge.
Yeah, and somebody's obviously working on something else, right?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, again, there's tremendous opportunity for gain from a financial standpoint. And through the anonymity of Bitcoin, one could really leverage this type of ransom demand without having a lot of consequences and a lot of exposure, and being it that it is anonymous and very difficult to trace.
Andrew, what is the latest as far as where this stands? At first we heard it was ebbing, and now we hear that at least one or two German companies have now been added to the list. What are you seeing so far online?
Well, Andre just talked about that 22-year-old who found that patch and was initially only known as Malware Tech, which I believe was his Twitter handle and his blog name.
Yeah, he said he spent $10.49 to find it.
To register that domain name, exactly. Well, we're seeing a lot of talk about this. It's called WannaCry, the name of it, because it makes people want to cry if you see that and you have to pay $300 to get your files unlocked. But they're calling it WannaCry 2.0. They're saying that the hackers supposedly have gone in, removed that kill switch feature, and they're now re-releasing or repopulating this virus throughout the internet. So we'll see if it continues to grow. That's the fear now. The number one thing to do, if it looks suspicious and it looks fake and it looks like it's not a legitimate thing, don't click on it. Don't open it. Just hit it to the spam folder or just delete it.
Andrew, we'll get back to you in just a moment. Andre Mendez, thanks so much for being with us, and good work that my computer still works.
Anytime. You know, we strive to keep those at bay, and we have been very successful, thankfully.
Thanks, Andre. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Andre Mendez, who runs all things computers here for the Broadcasting Board of Governors. That's all of the U.S. government broadcasting agencies, including this one, Voice of America. Andrew, what else has gone on?
Well, Donald Trump just speaking not too long ago at the Peace Officers Memorial, just up the hill from us, literally on Capitol Hill. And a lot of people having different opinions about his speech there, calling it a campaign-style speech, saying it was disrespectful, that he talked about the huge electoral support that he had from law enforcement officers. At one point, he tosses a hat to a six-year-old son of a slain police officer. Depending on who you ask, that was disrespectful or a touching moment. But other people saying it shows that he has great respect and support for law enforcement, and he's trying to honor them at this service up on Capitol Hill. So whether you see it as politicizing or as a memorial, it really depends on kind of your political stance, as many things do when it comes to major political figures like the president.
That's the way this country is now. It is heavily divided, and everybody has their own view on things, but that's the way it is in a democracy.
Yes, but we've seen a lot of police officers all over D.C. this weekend. I was concerned. Somebody, I was with a friend, he said, "Are we under attack, or is there an invasion or something?" I said, "No, it's just police week here in D.C. That's why we have all the police officers, and that's why President Trump is speaking to them today on Capitol Hill."
Andrew Palshefsky joining us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, a cyber attack that has already taken over computers in 150 countries could spread further. The UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting Tuesday on North Korea's latest missile test. A search is underway for a new director for the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation after President Trump fires James Comey. A Syrian war monitor says airstrikes early Monday killed 23 people near the country's border with Iraq. A senior U.S. official says the fight to retake Mosul from the Islamic State group is approaching its final stages. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. In 2016, scientists released a pair of studies that provided evidence the Earth and the Moon were showered with bits of star material from a nearby supernova or several supernovas about 2.5 million years ago. The researchers placed the exploding star or stars at a distance of about 300 light years away from us. Now, a new study proposes the stars actually exploded about half that distance. Study authors say that while a star exploding from such a distance today could cause some effects to Earth, it wouldn't cause the kind of serious damage that, for example, touch off mass extinctions. The distance a supernova could spell disaster to our planet's living creatures is estimated to be about 25 light years from Earth. But the new study also suggests that an exploding star at twice that distance could also spell doom. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. The UN Security Council is going to hold an emergency meeting tomorrow on North Korea's latest missile test. The United States, Japan, and South Korea requested this emergency discussion after Pyongyang launched a missile Sunday at an unusual high-altitude ballistic path that indicated it might be a new two-stage liquid-fueled rocket capable of flying up to 4,500 kilometers. Early today, North Korea said it had successfully conducted a test on the newly developed mid-to-long-range missile, supervised by its leader, Kim Jong-un, aimed at verifying the capability to carry a large-scale heavy nuclear warhead. The official news agency KCNA said the missile was launched at the highest angle so as not to affect the security of neighboring countries and flew 787 kilometers, reaching an altitude of 2,111 kilometers. We welcome to International Edition Joel Witt. He's a former diplomat dealing with the Korea issue, now a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University, as well as the founder of the website on North Korea, 38 North. Joel, thanks so much for being with us. What else about this latest North Korean missile test might set it apart from previous tests?
Well, I think the most important thing about this test is that it seems that it's quite possible that the North Koreans have started to test some of the technologies that would be needed to build an intercontinental ballistic missile. And by that I mean the high loft of the missile may have been intended, for example, to test a reentry vehicle that would allow a nuclear warhead to reenter the Earth's atmosphere unharmed after an intercontinental flight. So that's what's significant about this test.
So how far are people thinking that the North is from being able to deliver a nuclear warhead to the west coast of the United States? Has that been determined as yet?
Well, that's, of course, very unclear. A lot of that depends on how frequently the North Koreans start testing these technologies. And, of course, they probably have to at least conduct one or two tests of the full system. And it's very difficult to predict when that could happen. Some experts think it might happen within the next year. Others think it might take a little longer. But the bottom line is that North Korea is moving forward on this path of developing an intercontinental missile that would, of course, threaten the United States.
So how is it stopped? The White House has come out with a statement saying the test should serve as a call for all nations to implement far stronger sanctions against North Korea. Vladimir Putin has come out against it. So have the leaders of many other countries, obviously China, Japan. And Donald Trump, the U.S. president, has said in the past month or so that he would be actually honored to do that. Where do you think this lies?
Well, I think the point here is that the United States needs a strategy for dealing with North Korea, and that doesn't mean either sanctions or diplomacy. It means both. So the Trump administration has started out being fairly tough while also signaling that it's open to discussions. And I think what it needs to do now is pivot towards diplomacy because, you know, sanctions are only going to get you so far, particularly since China and Russia are going to oppose any very strong measures without at least trying diplomacy. So I think that's where we are now, that we need to try diplomacy, see if it works, and if it doesn't work, then we can move on to tougher measures and have a better chance of getting Chinese and Russian support.
What kind of international support beside the United States would it need, in your view, to make the negotiation stance workable?
Well, that's a very good question, and I can't predict that. But what I can say is that, you know, a big part of the game here is to get China to put as much pressure on North Korea as possible because of their close political and economic relationship. And the Chinese have so far, during the Trump administration, at least signaled a willingness to put some more pressure on the North Koreans. But their perspective is that they want to have a dialogue between the United States and North Korea to see if this can be resolved peacefully. So I think we need to give a little on that, if only to address Chinese concerns. And if the North Koreans really aren't interested, if they prove themselves, you know, not being sincere about negotiations, then we can go back to the Chinese and say to them, look, the North Koreans aren't really playing ball.
Well, with a new government, a new president in South Korea, with the possibility of talks maybe starting, why would the North Koreans then go ahead with a test? What about the timing of all this?
The point is that the North Koreans like playing tough guy, and so this is part of their strategy of coercive diplomacy. They are upping the pressure on all of us, but at the same time, they're holding open the door to starting some sort of dialogue. So this is the flip side of the coin. We're practicing coercive diplomacy against them. They're practicing it against us. So I wouldn't expect them to exercise unilateral restraint. That's just not in their DNA.
We've been speaking with Joel Witt, former diplomat dealing with the Korea issue, now a senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University and the founder of the North Korea website 38 North. Joel, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we continue now. A search is underway for a new director for the U.S. FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, after President Trump fired James Comey last week. Meanwhile, the president continues to make headlines and rankle lawmakers from both parties who criticize those actions. James Clapper, the former National Intelligence Director who served under the Obama administration, had some harsh words for the president's actions toward Comey on CNN's State of the Union yesterday.
I think in many ways, our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well, our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly.
An NBC Wall Street Journal poll released Sunday found only 29% of Americans approved of Comey's firing. 78% prefer an independent commissioner special prosecutor to investigate Russia's interference in the election. This is VOA.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information. Let's transition here. The classroom is not the only place where kids can learn. The circus can also provide an education. VOA's Faith Lapidus narrates this report by Faiza Al-Masri.
The Trenton Circus Squad, an acrobatics group in New Jersey, offers kids between 12 and 17 years old the chance to acquire a variety of unusual skills. Acrobatics, keeping spinning plates in the air, riding unicycles. It's one of more than a dozen social circus programs around the U.S., which bring together kids from low-income city neighborhoods and the wealthier suburbs. They help teens develop a sense of belonging, a belief in their own abilities, and give them a venue for building connections.
We're helping bring kids from the affluent communities surrounding Trenton, those teenagers, into Trenton to partner with the inner-city Trenton kids. to make those relationships, strengthen those friendships, those connections.
The Trenton Circus Squad was formed 2 years ago to combat the negative assumptions about teenagers in inner cities.
Performance is an essential part of what our teenagers experience. When they join, after the first couple of weeks, we expect them to get comfortable performing. And that may be doing something very simple, like spinning a plate or doing a forward roll. But they learn that performing is a way of giving back to other people. You make somebody smile, and the whole community can feel joyful.
The participating kids love it. Here they find a second home and feel safe.
Like, if I have problems, like, on, like, home or school, I could tell them because they're, like, family. And, like, they won't bring you down about it. They won't laugh at you. They will help you, like, they will help you out with it.
This is a really safe environment for me. Rather than seeing, like, going out on the streets and just being exposed to many different things, which are, like, either bad or good. But here, it's not no bad things. It's just all good.
It will help meeting new people and learning, you know, about different types of people. It will help me into expecting the best in everybody, I guess.
And once they come in here and they start engaging with one another through the circus arts, whether it's the acrobatics or the clowning or the aerials, where they have to work together, they slowly realize that they have a lot in common.
And that's when they're able to fly together over the invisible social line that divides them and connect with each other and the larger community. For writer Faisal Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Dan Crafton. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy your day.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $10 million for information leading to the identification or location of Mohammed al-Jolani, leader of the al-Nusra Front, or ANF, terrorist group. This is the first Rewards for Justice reward offer for a leader of al-Nusra Front, the Syrian branch of al-Qaeda. In 2013, al-Jolani pledged allegiance to al-Qaeda and its leader Ayman al-Zawahiri after he had a public falling out with ISIS. In 2016, in a video posted online, al-Jolani praised al-Qaeda and al-Zawahiri and claimed the ANF was changing its name to Jabhat Fat al-Sham. Under al-Jolani's leadership, ANF has carried out multiple terrorist attacks throughout Syria, often targeting civilians. In April 2015, ANF reportedly kidnapped and later released approximately 300 Kurdish civilians from a checkpoint in Syria. In June 2015, ANF claimed responsibility for the massacre of 20 residents in a Druze village in Idlib province, Syria. In January 2017, ANF merged with several other hardline opposition groups to form Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. ANF remains al-Qaeda's affiliate in Syria, and Jolani remains the leader of ANF, which is at the core of HTS. In 2014, ANF was designated as a foreign terrorist organization by the State Department. The same year, the UN added ANF to its sanctions list. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. For more information about al-Jolani, go to www.rewardsforjustice.net. We encourage anyone with information about al-Jolani to contact the Rewards for Justice office via email on the website, info@rewardsforjustice.net, by phone 1-800-877-3927 in North America, or by mail, Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 205200303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.